Session number 11945, rule 2.
Mr. Claxton, Reel 2. You were telling me about the Petty Officer Gunlayer.
Yes. They're also, besides being instructors, they're also a part of a gun's crew. When you've passed out of seamanship, you decide, or it's decided, you're asked what you'd like to go in for. Now, you have a... According to your educationally, you have a choice. The top grade, when I first joined, there was no wireless in those days. The top grade was signalman. You could be a signalman if your education was okay, or your ability was okay. After that, you had a choice. You could be seaman in the gunnery. You could take up gunnery, or you could take up electrical. That was a torpedo work. Or you could be proficient in... Well, you'd already learnt your knots and splices and canvas, work with a palm, what they call a palm and needle. You'd learnt all that before. That was all part... There was your boat work, sailing, all that sort. They all came in seamanship. But you had a choice of being either taking up the electrical side, which was torpedo work, or gunnery. That was in the main.
What did you opt for?
Seaman. A seaman in the first place. I had... seagoing training ship, you're put through your paces in every thing. Navigating, taking the wheel and that. You do your turn on the wheel. At sea, that's a funny sensation. See that compass going round. It's just like driving a car, you see, and instead of watching out where you're going, you're watching that pointer on the compass moving along. You're given the course to steer on, then north, north, south, or north, whatever it is, and you've got to keep it there. Because when you deviate from that, you've got to turn the wheel back, bring it back. It's fascinating. Heaving the lead, swinging the lead, dodging the column, of course. Heaving the lead, all that sort. Everything appertaining to the running of the ship. Now, in the training ship, seagoing training ship, as I was saying earlier on, you don't wear boots, nor shoes, barefoot, winter and summer. This is the honest truth I'm telling you. I've been with the others scrubbing the deck in the middle of winter, and there's a flipping sheet of ice on the deck. They just do. And the petty officer in charge of you, his name was Kibler, but Officer Kibler, he got killed at Jutland. He playing the flipping hose on your feet. Your feet get like flipping leather. And while you're doing that, all of a sudden, dear Petty Officer Kibler, he'd scream out over the masthead. And you dropped everything and you went up that flipping rigging. Oh, God. Over the rigging and bare feet in the middle of winter. And the rungs of rope, all frozen rope. You got to the top. You didn't go through the funk hole, what they call the funk hole. You went over the top, into the top, down the other side. And you're scrambling up there, and there's Petty Officer Kibler down below. He's got a piece of rubber about that size, tied on his wrist, swinging it around, waiting for the last boy down. And the last boy gets a wallop of that. Now, I can vividly remember a boy named Adams going up there. Poor bugger, he got frightened. He really got frightened, and he got stuck up there, and he wouldn't come down. They got him down. Oh.
How did they get him down?
Go up and one up either side and help him down. One up either side the rigging, you see. It's not just like a step ladder, it's the rigging goes right up wide. So go up either side. Yeah. Poor. Now I couldn't get to the top here and paint this window now. But you can't be 150 feet up there and the flipping chips swaying about. That's funny.
You must have had a good head for heights.
Well, we had to. We had to. You can go, you can't. You all had to do it. When he said over the masthead, there was about 30 or 40 of you. You dropped everything and you scrambled up that rigging. Dear, oh dear.
What's most of your instruction then, practical rather than theoretical?
Practical. It was practical. Absolutely. You went to school. A school teacher was usually a warrant officer, a qualified school teacher from ashore. Also, you had, on a battleship or more, you had a parson. Clerical. He wasn't trained as an officer, but he came in as an officer. Well, sort of welfare and that.
What did the schoolmaster teach you? What sort of subjects did you follow with him?
Leading on from school. Because at school, the school work then is entirely different now. All you had to do was the 3 R's, read, write and arithmetic. You knew your 12 times table, you were okay. It was nothing. I mean, to go from, say, an ordinary school to, well, one school I'm thinking of was the Hugh Middleton School in London. That was a sort of, where boys who won the scholarship went to. A child today, he's got, if he only realised it, he's got absolutely everything in front of him. The more you know, the less work you do, and the more money you earn. Now, that's true, isn't it? But it didn't apply nowadays. But now, they don't know how lucky they are. And on the other hand, if I was young, I wouldn't like to change my life then to theirs now. I enjoyed myself. We all did. I mean, our Christmas present used to be a orange in a stocking and a little bag of sweets. What do they get now? Dear, oh dear. No.
You said you had a padre on the battleship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have regular church parades?
Yes, every day. Every day you went to church 9 o'clock in the morning. Sunday was a full service, church service. And there's one hymn. The church is one foundation. The church is one foundation of capstan bars and buckets. Because that's how the church was made up. Bucket and a bucket with a capstan bar in between. Coming right back as you poos. Another one was... I used to put a parody to it. It was about song with the lifeboatman's anthem, you know, for those in peril on the sea. Oh. Going back again, when I was in the train, when we was in the training, at HMS Impregnable, when we first went, you had a lot of do-gooders, these philanthropic people ashore. Oh, let's have the boys take them to the theatre and give them a tea. Well, there was two people, Aggie Weston. You've never heard of her, have you?
The Temperance Lady.
Aggie Weston, the sailor's friend. Oh, she was. Her and her friend, they devoted their life to it, looking after the sailors. Well, coming aboard and getting, you know, from a religious angle, they were do-gooders, and there used to be, I don't know what there is now, but there used to be three sailors' rests, one in Chatham, Portsmouth and Plymouth, or Devonport. There were buildings, sailors' rests, where you went, where you booked in for the, if you were on all-night leave, you booked a cabin there, 6 months at a time. Oh no, it do it by Aggie Weston, and she's a good woman, really. But I remember we went to when I was on the Impregnable. I got a party of us to go to the theatre in Devonport, in Plymouth, and from there we went to the Sailor's Rest for tea and that. And I can remember the man who took it. Yeah. Couple of hymns and that, and I can hear him saying now, and we don't need a parody on this one, you sing the hymn as you know it. And there was a fella over in Chippenham near Villiers, he was an old sailor, he was with Shackleton on the Antarctic expeditions, a fella named Kennedy, or he. Whenever I used to, he was in the hall at Chippenham working for Captain Kirk, sort of a general dog's body. And every time I saw him, he used to go down and see me, he would say, another bun, Jack, another bun. Anyway, that's getting away from the subject. We're back on the Crescent.
Going to ask you whether you saw much of your officers, because what you've been saying, it sounds as though most of the instruction was done by the petty officers.
Oh, yes, yes, it's done by the petty officers. The officers, well, they were, as I say, it's different. Officers were sort of, how can I say, it was something different. The officers, there was, in our day, there was three class of people, the working class, the middle class, and the upper class. And the upper class were the recruiting place for officers. You see, now you get promotion on your merits. Then you didn't. They had to work, you know, pass their exams and that. I mean, Admiral Jellicoe and Beatty were never first seamen, boy seamen. They came in on the officer staff. Now, if you've got the know-how up top and you use it, you can go anywhere. As I say, the more you know, the more further you get. You're paid for what you know, but in those days, money spoke. If you got money. Money was a god then. It is now, for that matter, but not so much then. Do you know a man earning £400 a year, when I was a young boy, a person earning £400 a year was in a position to employ a maid, feeder and keeper for the year. And all his money was £8 a week. My, fantastic, isn't it? It's right there. The standing wage when, well, as you know, for agriculture work was 9 or 10 shillings a week. An ordinary labourer was £1 a week. A craftsman, my father, for instance, was a compositor. So I've got his apprenticeship paper somewhere here, or a copy of him. He'd served 7 years of apprenticeship, and his pay was 39 shillings a week.
And he was comparatively well off.
Yeah, well off. I mean, you could go to the theatre, a seat in the stalls at the theatre, a pint of beer and an ounce of tobacco, and come back home with change out of a shilling. Fantastic, isn't it? Anyway, getting back to the Crescent, we've been over the masthead. Your hammocks, you all slept in hammocks, and they were all lashed up in the morning. Lash them up, 7 turns on them, and all tucked in. And they were put in a hammock netting alongside the ship. Now that goes back right to the old days, wooden battleship days, because the hammocks then were used as protection. All piled up there. Anyway, there was no such thing as bunks then. We did four months. I came away from, I left HMS Crescent, and they sent me to Chatham Barracks. All us boys who joined up, by the way, we come from different places. Some come from Yorkshire, some from Wales, some from anywhere, all over the country. Now, they tried, if possible, there were 3 depots, Chatham, Portsmouth and Devonport. Now, they tried, if possible, to fit you into one of those depots that was nearest your home. In my case, I came from London, so, of course, I got Chatham. But I could have been sent to Devonport if they were full up at Chatham. In those days, you paid your fare home. So there was that. I got sent to Chatham. Us boys from the Crescent, we were nearly all Londoners. We got sent to Chatham. And that was in May 1914 there. And, of course, we were fully fledged boys then. But we were still segregated from the men.
You were still under training, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely. We're still under training. When we're segregated from the men, it was a heinous crime then. In those days, well, we take today, homosexuals are practiced now that everybody, I mean, they talk about it as they talk about reading a paper, don't they? But in those days, it was known as sodomy. And if anybody got caught at it in the services, was 2 years imprisonment and disgrace. There was no option about it, you see. And us boys were kept segregated from the men. Up till the age of 18, we were separated from them.
Did you come across any cases of it amongst the boys?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Remember one case. Now this is bordering on that. The fellow got 2 years and dismissed. And you know what? We was out in China at the time, up in the Yellow Sea at an island. There's your lady coming up at a place called Wei Ai Wei. Up there. The Admiral's residence was there, and this fellow got 2 years and dismissed from the service for disgrace for pinching the washing off the line, which included some of the Admiral's daughter's underclothing. Straight up, that's the honest truth. But it wasn't homosexuals, once a prevalent as it is now. It wasn't spoken of. I mean, it's the same as, I mean, in those days, a child that was illegitimate, he was debarred from any privileges nationally. I mean, it was a heinous crime. Now it's a heinous crime to be married, isn't it? No, but this is cold now.
Were you given any warnings about the risks by the padre, for example?
Oh, yes, yes. That was one of his jobs, to instill into us kids the good and the bad, what was evil and what was good. That was his job, apart from the religious side of it.
He was concerned with your moral welfare.
Yes, that's right, absolutely. I mean, my upbringing was such that, as a youngster, three times on a Sunday we went to church, Sunday school. My father was a chorister at Norwich Cathedral from the age of, from about 8 to 28, when we came to London. Why we came to London is another story. But he was a chorister there. He was a good singer, really. But he insisted on us boys, and we all used to go, not only our family, there used to be droves of us used to go to Sunday school. Now it's the droves go to this thing. See? Yeah. Oh, yes, you were brought up that in family life, as it should be.
What sort of training were you doing then at Chatham in Pembroke?
Carrying on the general work, seamanship, all sorts. Whatever's going, I mean, the whole object of it is, as I said before, is discipline. Now, Chatham Barracks, there'd be about, say, 2,000, maybe more than that, in there. And they had to keep a record of you. Well, you lined up for morning service on the parade ground, or if the weather was wet, in the drill hall, huge gate place. And the officer up top, who was taking charge of things, he would call out a certain, say, mess number 10 of Anson Block. It was a sort of a description of where you were. You was in the mess, number of mess you were in that particular block, Anson Block. He would call out that number of mess in that block, and the people who belonged to that parade in front. And that's why they kept a check on you. You never know when your name was going to be called out. So you're all there. There was no dodge in the column. And Chatham Barracks was these barracks were sort of staging post. You were in there to be sent, sorted out, and then sent to other ships. Well, I was there, as I say, in 1914, and things were getting a bit, politically, things were getting a bit nasty.
Did you have any idea that a war was likely?
Well, it was in the air. It was in the air. Although in 1914, in July 1914, there was the review, the review of the fleet, by King George V at Spithead. That went along as usual. I didn't take part in that. We were in barracks. But it was shortly after that war became inevitable, as it were. And us party of boys, all the usual routine, about 50 of us, we were sent to Sheerness. to HMS Juno, to coal ship, get her ready for sea. She was in reserve. I can remember that well. And that was a, referring to coal ship, that's another thing in the seaman's life, was coal in ship in those days because there was no oil. Now, coal in ship was an evolution or evolution, fleet evolution, where each ship, coal ship the same day, and it was a race. They'd start, I'd say, 8 in the morning, up would go the flag in the flagship, and they'd everybody start coaling ship. You have a collier alongside. So many of you in the collier filling up the bags, then the hoist that hoist the bags up, and then they, so many of them tip them down into the coal bunkers, and there'd be the bunker party down below, levelling the coal off, keeping the ship on an even keel, that sort of thing. And it was, as I say, it was a fleet evolution. And every hour, up would go the flags, how many tons of coal each ship had got in. It was a real race, just like all. But it kept everybody on their toes. Now, in a coal ship, everybody except the captain, coal ship, no matter who you were, officers and everybody, parson and everybody, you all coal ship. And the only difference was that when wireless came in into being, there used to be wireless operators then, the old cat's whisker days, and it was a idea going round that the coal dust would upset their hearing, and they were the only ones that were excused coal in ship. But their job was to man the duty boat. Instead of a coal ship, they'd man the duty boat, which they were capable of doing. Anyway, HMS Crescent was, as I say, was training. It was hard old life, but we enjoyed it. We'd really enjoyed it.
When it became clear that there was likely to be a war, what was the reaction of the boys in your mess?
Oh, we're all for it. We're all for it. When you say the boys in our mess, there was hundreds of us, really. I mean, we were, to be brutal about it, we were just gun fodder, you see. Anyway, the war started on the 4th of August, and on the 8th of August, was all us lads in Chatham Barracks, whole line of us there, or I should say 500 or more boys, all lined up in four. It used to be in columns of four then, now it's columns of three. But we was in columns of four, and the regulating petty officers went along with an officer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, U20, as it is, in columns of four. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, U20, HMS Bulwark. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, U4, U20, HMS Inflexible, and so on and so on. Well, I can't do I was in standing in the line of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, U5, HMS Implacable. That was me, I was one of them. And in the column next to me was a little boy named Titch Bailey. I got a friend, he came from Stratford. Joined up the same day as I did. We were still together and we were friendly. He pulled me down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, HMS Bulwark. There he stood. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, HMS Implacable. There's us two standing together. He's the Bulwark on the Implacable. Now, he could have shifted over there and somebody could have gone there and changed over. Nobody had been any the wiser. But he didn't. No, I didn't. And he got blown up in Sheerness Harbour in the November 1914. HMS Bulwark blew up. 800 lives lost. And that's nine. It was November 1914. And when I came here in 1969 to Burwell, go down the barber's shop for a haircut, and I'm talking to the barber, Tom Ellis, talking away to him. We got talking about different things, and the Navy cropped up. Oh, he says, I lost a brother in the early war. Did you? Yes. Yeah, he said, got blown up on the bulwark in Chiernut. God, I was about 400 yards. HMS and Blackmore was about 400 yards away from the bulwark when she blew up, 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Poor old Ditch Bailey. He didn't last long. Here I am. And right through it, haven't been wounded or anything.
You had good luck.
Somebody up there's been looking after me.
What happened to you when you got to the Implacable? What did they do with you on that ship?
We're still on training. We're still segregated. But we're part of a gun. If we were seamen, we might be part of a gun's crew with them. But